Welcome to Sage Dad Life. I'm Rob, a dad who is on a unique journey. I've raised a wonderful son and daughter now in their 30s, and at 55, I find myself facing and embracing fatherhood again with my 2-year-old daughter, Sage. I've learned many lessons. Being a father isn't just about time, it's about intention, and I intend on being the best dad that I can be. Here, we break the mold of traditional fatherhood, embracing the joy, challenges, and wisdom that come with raising children to be equipped for this ever-changing world. If you're a dad looking to lead with love, confidence, and hopefully a little humor, you're in the right place. Let's dive in. This episode of Sage Dad Life could be sponsored by your brand. Just like fatherhood, the best things in life come with support, guidance, and a little wisdom. Help dads navigate their journey with confidence. For your quality brand, we're proud to present engaged and empowered fathers. Visit www.sagedad.life or email rob@sagedad.life for more information. Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of Sage Dad Life. I'm your host, Rob, and I am so excited to have you here as we embark on this journey together. This podcast is about something deeply personal and meaningful to me, fatherhood. Not just fatherhood, but the joy, the lessons, and yes, the challenges of being a present and intentional dad. To give you a little personal background, I am the father of 3 wonderful children. 2 of them are grown and have lives of their own. They're in their 30s. And I also have a 2-year-old daughter who keeps me on my toes every single day. At 55 years old, I've had the unique opportunity to experience fatherhood at different stages of life. And let me tell you, it has been the most rewarding and humbling adventure of my lifetime. I really hope that Sage Dad Life becomes more than just a podcast. I'd like to build a space where we explore what it means to raise strong, confident, and compassionate children in today's crazy world. It's inspired by themes like the Girl Dad movement, which celebrates fathers taking on non-traditional roles and embracing the unique challenges of raising daughters, partly because my youngest is a daughter, and I have those challenges, and it is a different world today for our daughters than it was yesterday. And that's just a reality. It's not a political statement. It's just a reality. And fathers will play an important role on building that next generation of women who will have to live in this world that we're leaving them. I hope that from this you can expect practical tips on teaching life skills and independence, honest conversations about the joys and the struggles of parenting, insights into how to build strong father-daughter bonds, and most importantly, creating that legacy of empowerment for the next generation. I'm going to cover things like teaching resilience and instilling confidence, fostering creativity, and navigating tricky waters of modern parenting. My goal is to share stories, tools, and inspiration that help us become better dads, ultimately better humans. Let's talk a little bit about why I started this podcast. My journey as a father hasn't been exactly linear. I had children early in life and I had children late in life. 2 very different perspectives. When my older kids were growing up, I was very much focused on building a career, being a provider. While I was there for them, and I've always wanted to be a dad, I've always thought I was a good dad. There were times where I wish I was more present, where the external factors of the world were more important than the internal dynamics of my family and just being, you know, being real. With my youngest daughter, I have had this opportunity to slow down and really soak in the experience. This time around, I'm determined to be that dad who shows up, not just physically, but emotionally and mentally. I am all in. The real aha moment for me, I had a lot of aha moments, but when I started really engaging with my daughter and trying different things, trying different activities, I think that the idea that it was okay for me to spend an afternoon baking bread with my daughter, in fact, it was probably one of the most meaningful things that I did all week. I have just tried this time around to be there. In fact, when I found out that my daughter was on the way, I talked to my older kids and I said, you know, tell me, you know, what did I do good and what did I not do good as a dad? Was I a good dad? And, you know, they're nice people. So, yeah, they said I was a good dad. But it was really, you know, it was the memories of doing things together that were most important to them. You know, they didn't remember the long hours that I worked. They didn't remember my paycheck getting bigger and bigger as my career grew. They remembered the little things that we did. And then I look back and it was my first marriage, and we spent so much time building our life. We probably spent too little living it. And I got to think that that's common when you start out at a young age. You have so many things that you have to accomplish to stabilize your life. I can be proud of some of the things that I did and even quite accomplished in my career. But when I changed, when my life shifted, you know, but the things that I missed the most were, you know, the Christmas ornaments that we collected every year. Things that had memories of my children and things that I could look at and say, I remember that. I remember that moment with my child. None of them had anything to do with my career. And, you know, just like many people, it really was the onset of COVID that sent my career into a death spiral. As a 55-year-old in technology, you can imagine that, you know, the jobs were not there. And I've had to reevaluate everything about my life and what is important and what is not important. And that process has been painful. But also incredible. I mean, it just absolutely incredible. And the fact that my daughter came along and, the journey that we've had so far just makes me a different person. I don't know how else to explain it. I want to be a different person. I want to be a great dad. I want her to look back at time we had together. I want her to measure every future relationship by the quality of love that I'm able to give her, because she deserves that. And I think that will be my greatest accomplishment. Okay with that. In fact, I'm more than okay with that. I think that that is more than anyone can hope for. And I'm sort of done with the making money for other people and long hours and not because I'm lazy. I work very, very hard. It's because it's not worth it. The material things that you get, the paycheck that you get, it can all go away quickly. You can be discarded very, very quickly. But your family, your children, they don't discard you. They're what's important. And I hope that this podcast really lives up to that. And I think fathers deserve credit. Too often, I think fathers are sort of relegated to the breadwinner role. Mothers are the caregivers. Mothers are the teachers. Fathers have so much to offer. And good fathers already know this. And there are lots of good fathers out there. Lots of better fathers than I am, I'm sure. So I will invite them and I will talk to them and hopefully we'll all get some ideas from their experiences. I'm going to focus probably on mostly older fathers who have lived it, you know, who have made the mistakes and who have done the things. Nothing against newer fathers, but you guys are still learning and you'll get there. And if you're listening to this podcast, I think that just the idea that you want to be a better dad is phenomenal. You know, these special guests probably won't include a lot of quote unquote parenting experts. I've heard some of those podcasts and, you know, there's quality stuff out there and there's crap out there too. I have the requisite 10,000 hours to be an expert at parenting. They're real hours in the trenches doing the job. I don't need a college diploma that focuses on children's studies or anything else that to be a good dad. And there have been good dads throughout history who never had any of that. And those dads, I think their story needs to be told. I think you need to hear what is on their minds and what they remember and how they remember and what's important to them. You know, I might throw a mom in there once in a while, share insights and experiences about the role that their partner or whatever relationship to the father figure that they have for their children and the, you know, their perspective on. We're going to keep it real. Parenting is not always picture perfect. I'm not going to spend hours virtue signaling about what a great person I am and how I have every answer, because I don't. I do know a lot because I've done a lot. I've had a career. I've had a top tier income, and I've worked at hourly rate, and I've done both. I know technology, but technology doesn't do much for older people, and it's not something that it's talked about a lot. But I'm sure there's others out there like me who are facing this sort of second life. And let me share, a quick story about Sage and I. And I just really wanted her to get involved with preparing family meals and understand what it takes to put food on the table and put dinner on the table. And so this fall I planted a garden with her. We went out and we watered it every day. I'd never done a garden before. We ended up doing pretty good with the tomatoes. We got lots and lots of tomatoes. So made sauce, made salads, everything you could possibly think of with tomatoes. Pumpkins, they did okay. Like I said, it was my first gardening experience. And I hope to do better this spring. But it was so much fun to do it with her. And we'll talk about that a lot in the spring as we take lessons learned from this past fall. And we'll apply those. And she's a little older and can participate a little bit more. And I think that we'll have a lot of fun doing that. But after the garden kind of ended, I wanted to keep doing this. And it really started, I think, with the tomatoes. We had, you know, planted and grown these tomatoes, and they were delicious. And I wanted her to see the sort of completion of that. So we made dinner a couple of times, and we made a beautiful quiche, and I made my first pie crust ever from scratch. And then we made this quiche, and everybody loved it. It was delicious. And we had fresh cut tomatoes. We made pizza, which was a little bit of a fail because I got this outdoor pizza oven, and I kind of burnt the pizza. It was charred beyond recognition. My mother-in-law graciously ate it anyways and said she likes burnt stuff. So, you know, go figure. But the process of rolling the dough and putting the toppings on the pizza, that was something that Sage was really, really engaged with. And we just kind of built from there. We've been on this baking kick lately and making everything from Amish pretzels to sourdough bread. And it has been just mind-blowing how much fun it is to do that with her. And so just looking at those activities, I thought, you know, I want to share this with somebody, and I want people to have ideas and to do their things with their children. And yeah, so podcast born, I guess. And it's going to evolve, I'm sure. Like I said, this is the first episode, and I hope to catch your attention enough to get you to hit subscribe and to follow my progress as I get better and better at this. So one of the things that's important to me, I think, is that I try and have a guest with each of my episodes and some different perspective from another father, somebody who has lived their own truth and understands what it is to raise a kid. And these are just normal people. I don't have any particular pull with any star power, so you're not going to get, you know, Taylor Swift's dad or anything like that, at least not right away, huh? But you'll get your next door neighbor, and you'll understand, you know, what they're thinking and what they're proud of, and what they wish they did differently. And maybe that gives you a couple of ideas on how to be a better dad. And that's not a bad thing. I think arguably men in general don't talk enough about this stuff. They leave the talking to the moms, or at least I did. Yeah, maybe I'm just old. Maybe this new generation is a lot more open about what they do. I think that would have done a lot for me if I had had, you know, a support group or a support network of other dads to talk, you know, to strategize about different approaches to take, to encourage me, you know, I think that would have made a difference. So if I make a difference by sharing these stories, I think that's a valuable thing. And I really hope that I do. And I hope that I keep it, you know, upbeat enough to keep your attention. You know, I'm always going to appreciate feedback. My email is rob@sagedad.life. So reach out to me for really any reason. A couple of housekeeping things. I'm going to share activities that I do with my daughter. I'm going to share some photos. But for the most part, you'll get the back of her head. I'm not here to hold her up as some kind of trophy and expose her on social media. This is about fathering and being dad, not about look at how cute my kid is, or living through them or anything like that. So, but I do want to care. I do want to share activities. So I've experimented a little with doing some video of our baking experience. And so I'm going to share that, and who knows, this will evolve. I promise you that. So again, my email is rob@sagedad.life. And certainly any feedback that you might have, any ideas for future episodes would be great. Also, any dads that you know who have interesting stories or who are particularly proud of their parenting legacy, or just, you know, would be willing to talk. Certainly make an introduction, let them listen to the podcast. And if they're interested, reach out. And it's again, rob@sagedad.life. I plan on doing, you know, an episode at least once a week. I think consistency is important. And I think there's enough to talk about. Certainly enough in my daughter's activities to keep everyone entertained for once a week. I think that's fair. I will share, you know, bits about me, about my life, and but I'm, you know, for the most part going to try and keep, you know, anything that could personally identify my daughter out of the experience. It is not her. This is my thing. The idea of sharenting, which is the new sort of thing, where you just overshare your child. I think that is not healthy for anyone. There will be people who hear that and go, "Oh, you're sharing photos all the time." Those are people in my network, and I do have a Facebook account and a Instagram account, which are private. I have less than 100 friends. I think it's down to about 70. And those are people who are important to me, people who have shown an interest in, you know, keeping up to date with what is going on with my life or with my daughter's life. And I will share things on there that I will not share on the public Sage Dad Life sites. And, you know, I expect them to respect that and likewise not share the photos and things that I share on the private channels outside of those channels. but I do share. And kind of rewind for a minute. Let me tell you a little bit about when Sage was born. Sage was born about 2.5 years ago. And she was born early, a couple months early. And her mom spent about a month in the hospital before she was born. She had this thing where your amniotic fluid leaks, kind of like the early water breaking. And so as soon as, you know, they discovered that, she was in the hospital until she gave birth. And she was able to stay there for several weeks. And those weeks were critical in my daughter's development. And most likely my daughter would not have made it without that extra time and medicine, steroids to help her develop quicker. But she was born and she was 2.5 pounds. 2.5 pounds and went, you know, directly into the NICU. And I spent the next 6 weeks visiting the NICU every day. My wife and I were the only ones allowed, you know, to interact with our daughter. We had to, you know, scrub up every time we went in the room and ask permission to hold our child. You know, those are tough things. Sitting there and listening to the monitors beep and watching the oxygen level of my daughter's blood and watching, you know, alarms go off, watching her little toes turn blue because of the central line. All of those things were life-changing. During that time, I had faith that she was going to pull through, that she was strong. And I also wanted to share this beautiful, beautiful little girl with my family, with friends, with my wife's family. So every day I would visit, mostly 3 times a day. I would go have my private time with her at about 4 a.m. I let my wife sleep, but I would drive over and I would sit with her from day one. And I would stay with her and I would talk to her and I would just be. And then usually around lunchtime, I would run over, deliver whatever milk my wife was able to collect and just check on her. And then in the evenings, I would bring my wife over and my wife would spend her time with her. And each one of those visits was very special. And I took photos and I shared them with my family every day it was text messages. So I had this group and I would just text new photos every day. And it became the way that my family got connected with my daughter. And when we were able to come home, And when we had her and we were taking care of her and we were facing things like a formula shortage and just crazy stuff, I started, instead of doing the text message, I started sharing on Facebook. And to do that, I reduced greatly my circle. And unfriended a lot of people, people who I had, you know, contact with over the years, but they weren't, you know, they weren't family, they weren't really close friends or anything like that. I just wanted to be able to share, and yes, overshare, with, people that, you know, it really mattered to. And so I've continued that, and I have tried to keep it in that world. And, you know, there are family and friends on there who probably think I'm like crazy for, you know, sharing as many photos as I do, but it really does come from a place of wanting to keep everyone connected. I have family everywhere from Oklahoma to Switzerland, and those people want to stay connected. And sometimes it's the little things that get posted that they'll go in and they'll like it right away because it made them feel a certain way, or they felt particularly connected to that image or that comment. And I don't know, it's just, I don't regret that. I don't regret all the photos I have. I have a real timeline of her history to date. When I decided to do the podcast, I realized that I was probably going to share outside of that circle. And so I really thought a lot about what I was going to share and how I was going to share it. And, you know, I made some conscious decisions, and I'm not saying that those will be the way it's going to be. I'm going to kind of see how it goes. And I want to share my daughter and what she's doing and what's working, what's not working, and everything else, but not, I would be mortified if I took an embarrassing moment and put it out there in the ether for her to live with for the rest of her life. Or you know, I want to be that respectful person. I want her to look back at the history of this podcast and of things that she did with her dad as real moments. And there's a certain level of privacy to those that I want to try and maintain. And so as I experiment with this, just, you know, bear with me. Anyway, I'm just sort of rambling now. So I want to get to my first guest, and we're going to talk about his journey as a father, and I hope that you enjoy it. And again, I hope you subscribe, and if you have a father that you think would be a good guest, let me know. I'm accessible. It's rob@sagedadlife.com. rob@sagedad.life. I'll get back to you best I can. Welcome to Sage Dad Life. Today I have a special guest with me, Paul Kisman. Paul, welcome to Sage Dad Life.
Great to be here.
Thanks. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and your journey so far?
Well, I started out in a very traditional upbringing as far as family life. Back in the 60s and the 70s, parenting roles were very specific in a lot of ways. Father went out to work, bring home the paycheck. Mom stayed home, raised the family, raised the kids. In my mom's case, she was in charge of five very active boys. And no sisters, no daughters. And dad had to work kind of 6.5 days a week just to support us.
That's a lot of mouths to feed.
Oh, yeah. A lot of, and we were hungry boys, too. And in fact, we never, ever saw the inside of somebody else's house. We were never invited to other people's house because of that. mostly, you know, the roles of parenting were set by them. My mom Well, now I realize had the unfair portion, literally worked 10 days a week compared to my father's 6.5 to keep going with us. And it was definitely a challenge. So now that I'm, you know, older, had one daughter of my own, you know, my life started out with a significant amount of education. I went through all the way to a couple of years in college. I did go to art school, but through the opportunities afforded to me, I was able to learn how to work on heavy equipment. I was a heavy equipment technician for about 15 years, and then eventually worked my way into equipment management and ended up as a Caterpillar branch manager for Caterpillar dealership. Recently retired a few years ago, and now I didn't want to sit around, so I became a school bus driver, which I'm enjoying the interactions with the kids. And I think you've mentioned it to me in the past that we see a lot of the similarities. I see a lot of the similarities of these kids with my own daughter, and I'm enjoying it a lot. So it's been kind of an interesting experience to go from full-time management to watching and driving kids to school.
Can you tell me a little bit about your daughter and the person she's become?
Yeah, she has been the light of my life, basically, from day one. She is an extremely sociable person. I think the last time I checked her Facebook, she had almost 2,000 friends on just her Facebook account. One of the jokes that we have is that anytime we would go out to a restaurant, she would inevitably run into one of her friends that she either worked with or went to school with. So it's kind of a running joke with us. But her education, very similar to my own, couple years of college. But her work ethic, her drive must have come from my father, who you know, worked very hard to get where they were. She has eventually worked her way into management. And she's the type of person that works well with people, likes to see their personal growth. People enjoy working for her. So I think there's a lot of similarities in our experiences thus far through working life.
Nice. She sounds pretty special.
She does. She is. Not because she's mine, but because she is.
Can you take us back to the moment when you first found out you were going to be a father? What kind of emotions ran through you?
You know, being a young, you know, growing up in a house of all boys, never really had the sister aspect, learning how to deal with emotions. And it was I think I was pretty calm about it in the beginning. I was very happy. What made me feel good about knowing that I was going to become a father was the idea that I was going to achieve something that my parents did, that I would become someone who was depended on and, you know, hopefully become a leader within my own family. But that's pretty much what I remember. It didn't seem like there was this epiphany of, oh my God, what am I doing? It just was, seemed like a very natural aspect of life.
Nice. Did you have any like fears or doubts? Did you feel ready?
Yeah. I mean, I was not young. I had my daughter when I was around 28. So it wasn't like I was early, you know, early 20s or even late teens. So I was ready. I was definitely ready and looking forward to it.
Was there anything, you talked a little bit about the vision you had of what a father was and what you wanted to be. Anything in particular that influenced your vision?
Well, I think the fact that my vision was of a traditional, what a traditional roles would be for 1960 and 1970, I saw my dad working a lot of hours, bringing in a lot of the paycheck, come home and just basically be dead tired, eat his dinner and go to bed. Whereas my mom was the sole center of the family. I looked at it as, well, there's something seems to be wrong with that whole setup where, you know, one parent has to be almost, you know, absent in a lot of ways. So the do's that I learned from him was that, you know, to work hard and support your family, but the don'ts were try to be more involved. And that's what I think my success is, and going into my relationship with my own daughter, is that I was very active in her life.
Nice. What was the biggest change in your personal identity when you became a dad?
Well, I went to somebody who only cared about themselves to a great extent, to becoming a person that looked upon the responsibility and as being a protector for my daughter. The cliche of you would take a bullet for somebody, that's exactly how I felt. And, you know, it wasn't something I felt before becoming a father. You know, I cared about my mom and, you know, probably would do the same, but openly I felt I would protect her to the extent of my own life.
Yeah. Can you share just a moment from early childhood where you really felt like you were stepping into a brand new world?
Yeah. And I think part of this is my early upbringing. Again, being a family of all boys and having a lot of guy friends that we used to hang around with and, you know, playing baseball and doing what boys do. My biggest thing was that my perception of what girls were and who women were very narrow, to say the least. And I have to say that a lot of it was because of the influence of media at the time. I hate to say this, but stolen magazines from one of my friend's father's collection of mailings definitely had made me think of things in a different light. So one day when I was pushing a shopping cart with my daughter in the supermarket, Christy was sitting in that seat on the front or on the top, grabbing candies out of the, you know, trying to throw them into our grocery pile. I looked at the magazines and I looked at it and I saw, you know, Popular Mechanics, Field and Stream, magazines that were slated for men and boys. And then I saw the other side of that, what Christie's magazines were. And they were magazines that, how to make yourself beautiful to attract a man and how to, you know, what fashions to wear. And a lot of magazines had sexy covers on the front. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, my daughter's not going to have the same influencers that I did when I grew up. And that was very eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
And it, yeah.
You feel like it's gotten any better?
Today?
Yeah.
No,
today.
I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. I think people are more aware of it. I think it's more out in the open. But quite frankly, you know, not to get political, but I don't see it having a positive effect yet.
Yeah.
And it's been a long.
How did becoming a father change kind of your day-to-day life, relationships, priorities? Obviously, she became a big priority, but it had to change the dynamic of day-to-day living.
Well, I think my own maturity was an issue, but my feeling to be her protector was so strong that it clouded my ability to parent the way probably I should have 100%. Not to say that she turned out wonderful. It's like I said, in spite of me, but I remember that, her mom, who is now my ex, we did not have a united front. Now, I don't know if I would ever have agreed to some of the parenting tactics that she had, but we definitely caused a problem and a rift within my relationship with her. And it also made it tough for me to be a parent who wasn't more of a friend to my daughter than somebody who is more of somebody who can give out reasonable discipline and make her, you know, give her good guidance. So there was a little bit of an issue with that. So her being my priority and me feeling that I needed to protect her at all at all costs, definitely had some negatives. Not all negatives, a lot of positives, but some negatives in relationships.
What was the most challenging moment you faced as a father, and how'd you get through it?
As I said before, learning to be tough, learning to be a father when I needed to be a father instead of just a cool dad or whatever you want to be. It made my I don't think it was good for her. So that was really the challenge, was to get from that point. And eventually I did, but it came later in life where I was a lot tougher with her. And I think about, you know, maybe if I was tougher in certain instances in her early 8 days, maybe her ability to finish college or do certain things might have been, it might have happened instead of, you know, not happening.
Yeah. Have you ever doubted yourself as a dad? How'd you handle that?
Yeah. Well, I think going, this is probably the part where I go into how I kind of changed our relationship. When she first started driving, she was not a good driver. She had several considerable accidents with her cars, and I worried a lot about it, especially with the use of her cell phone, text messaging. You know, it was a constant worry, but I couldn't get that across to her. One evening, and this is after I'm separated with her mom and living in another place, I received a phone call from her. It was probably about 2 o'clock in the morning. And she goes, "Hi, Dad. Don't worry. I'm at the hospital. They just want to get checked because I had an accident on the parkway." And half asleep, I kind of like said, "Oh, okay." So then I'm like waking up after that, after I hung up, and I'm like, "Wait a minute. She had an accident. What's going on?" Fortunately, she called back, and I asked her a little bit more probing questions. I said, "Christy, what happened?" She goes, "Well, I kind of rolled the car on the parkway." I'm like, "What?" So then I got in the car. I ran up to Overlook Hospital, I was just seeing her with her mom leaving the hospital, and I asked her about it. She seemed to be okay. She seemed a little bit, you know, cavalier, nonchalant about the accident, but I waited maybe an hour or so for the lot that her car was towed to, and I went to go see it, and I said, "Oh my God, this car looked like it went through like a cement mixer. Well, every part of it was dented in. Her side of the car was okay, but the passenger side was completely crushed in." And I literally went to pieces at that point. And a few days later, I talked to her on the phone, and I just lost it. I was both angry, crying, telling her I don't want to lose her. I couldn't bear it if she died before I did. I told her she had to stop doing what she's doing. She's gonna hurt herself, and she'll you know, be the end of me for sure. And I think that period of time, that conversation on the phone, had to have some kind of a change in her life, because she ended up not having any more accidents. She would always say, "I'm not on the telephone when we're talking to her," or "She's not texting on the," you know, she was very adamant about not doing the things she did before. Which, by the way, she told me that she had the accident because a big plastic bag blew across the road and she avoided it. And when I actually went to her car, I found her cell phone. And at exactly the same time that the police call went into the police call, was exactly the same time she was texting. So I knew she wasn't. And I confronted her about it, which she didn't deny.
Yeah, that's every parent's worst nightmare. Glad it worked out and kind of snapped her out of that. These unexpected struggles, they come up a lot as a parent. How have they shaped you as a father?
Well, they made me understand where I was, my lack of maturity. I think not having sisters, not understanding, you know, what give and take there is. You know, with being with all boys, you basically punch your brother in the arm and then you go play baseball later. But, you know, dealing with relationships and that is something that I needed to learn how to do. And my first reaction was to baby her and to have her be my, you know, daddy's little girl, and it was a wonderful thing. But being tough was that was the biggest struggle I can recall.
Yeah,
it still is.
It never ends, does it?
No.
No. Who has been your biggest mentor or anyone who kind of guided you through fatherhood, and how did they help you?
I think my father was my biggest mentor, along with my mom, not on necessarily fatherhood, but family and things like that. But my father's hard work ethics was, undoubtedly he did that out of love. That's the way he was able to really show his love. The unfortunate part of that is that, he was not around enough. But when he was, his level of patience for us was astounding. He just, when he did get older and could free his time up, my younger brothers benefited a lot from his being there. He was a parent that was always there when he could be, even if he was dead.
Did he share any advice or wisdom that had a significant impact on you?
Not sharing verbally, because he was a very quiet man. He didn't have a lot to say. In fact, there was times when I remember riding in the car with him, when usually there's a gaggle of kids in the car, but this one time he and I were, and I was sitting in the front seat and he was driving, and I felt like I was with a stranger. We had nothing to say to each other. I didn't know how to talk to him. It wasn't until later in life that he started to open up and talk about things and family and things that I didn't even know that he had his own troubles. I thought, that dad was Superman and just, could do anything.
Yeah. Have your kids ever surprised you or sort of become your mentor in some way?
Well, that's a good question, because, Christy has, over the last 7 to 10 years, has become more and more involved with my life, and kind of being my reminder to make sure I go to different doctor's appointments, or when it came to family issues that I might have with my own brothers or whatever, she would be the one I would tend to call, and she would give me the advice that so it made me feel really good. And even when she was talking about, while I was working full-time for Caterpillar and going through my own struggles, she would be very supportive, and I would do the same for her in her role. So we basically were mentors for each other. But it was amazing how much she turned into a very good mentor for me, and it was just wonderful to see.
Yeah, that's great. When they start teaching you things and pointing you in the right direction, it's a pretty amazing feeling.
Yeah, anytime I need help with my Apple Watch or Apple phone, things like that, she's always there too. So I should have thrown that in too.
That's awesome. Have you ever experienced a moment in fatherhood where you felt completely lost or just overwhelmed? How'd you find your way back?
I would say not really. I think that I always seem to have a very high confidence level of things that, things will always work out the way they do. Obviously the time when my daughter had the accident, that was pretty trying, and it made me feel lost. And the fact that my relationship was strong enough with her that I could actually, express how I felt. And that's probably the only time, but for the most part, my bond with my daughter has always been rock solid. So I never really felt like I had to make my way back. I just needed to sometimes get aggressive or get tough. And that's kind of where it landed.
Yeah. How about a really tough decision you had to make as a dad? Any of those pop up?
Yeah. When my ex and I were not, I don't think we were suited to be married together from day one, but from a very early age, I knew Christy's small enough to be rocked on my shoulder to fall asleep small, was I realized that this was going to be tough. This was going to be tough because, you know, of the vastly different lifestyles and how we viewed family, and the family that I came from compared to where she came from was very different. And when, you know, it was more like when Christy was like 16, almost 17 years old, is when her mom and I decided to split. That was a tough decision because I knew, especially back in that time, fatherly parental rights were not as strong as the rights that women had. And I didn't want to lose the time I had with Christy from that time going forward. Fortunately, Christy was already starting to, you know, have a life of her own friends. And when we did split, I ended up getting an apartment, which was about a mile away from the house. The apartment had a room dedicated for Christy when she stayed over. So I was able to keep a lot of good contact with her. And plus, I was also very much involved with any activities she had, what she did it with school. I was always there. Right? She needed to ride somewhere before she was able to drive herself, I would always be the parent to take her. Mm-hmm. So
how do you handle the weight of the responsibility that comes with shaping a child's life? Is there anything wisdom you can pass on in that regard?
Well, I think at first when she was very young, you know, most of the tasks and shaping are mostly functional, like, you know, making sure she's fed, getting her to preschool, picking her up after aftercare, being the one to make sure that she is healthy and whatnot. Where the challenges came is when she started to be a teen and I became obsessed with making sure when she was at a school activity or needed a ride somewhere that I was going to be the one there. You know, I would read stories about, you know, these horrific accidents that happened at school events, and I wanted to be the guy outside that would run into a burning building and make sure she was going to be safe. I would look and basically look into the doors and windows of schools and things like, just to make sure she was still there. And unfortunately, a lot of her friends used to kid her about me being a stalker dad, but I just couldn't be anywhere else. You know, there was one time she went to, she was at a high school event. She wanted to go to, I think it was one of the local chain restaurants with her friends after a school event. And I said, okay, I'll drive you over there. So I drove her over there and sat out in the parking lot. And I watched her come out of the restaurant early and get into a van. So I drove after the van and they pulled up into a diner. And as she got in, I called her on her cell phone and I said, I'm sitting right here. Come to me. You're grounded. So she got in and she goes, but Dad, we have the other restaurant. And she gave me all kinds of stories. But and actually, that was one that her mom, my ex, was kind of saying, boy, that was pretty tough on her. But I just felt like, you know, I had to be there for everything, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, gave her very readily. I never held anything against her.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nothing can get in the way of that relationship. How has fatherhood changed you as a person?
Well, without hesitation, growth and maturity, personal growth and maturity was something that changed me from this carefree young guy who didn't have any responsibilities other than to make sure, you know, he can work a part-time job or do something like that. And it really, really changed me to the point where, you know, even how I conducted myself with other people, you know, it was a huge thing. And, you know, it might be corny, but my daughter made me a better man.
Not corny at all. And I think true of most of us. What's something that you kind of went into this whole parenting experience thinking, and then you completely changed your mind about?
Well, for sure, and I mentioned it before, traditional parenting roles. back in my days, you know, we would go out. Dad would be already gone for work. We would go out all day long. Mom would be home doing mom things and making sure that there was dinner on the table for us and him, my dad. And, you know, I saw that as the way of life. And I think it was that for many people, that, you know, the mom-dad relationship was so standardized that when I had Christy, which was probably when I was 28, I still felt that is the way that it should be. But life and people had changed, and you start seeing more of dual parenting roles between parents, where sometimes fathers were stay-at-home dads and mothers were brought in the big paychecks and all those things. And I thought that was so wrong at the time. How can that possibly be good for a family unit to have that kind of, you know, have that kind of setup between the parents? And I think, you know, there could be an argument to say that there is some issues with, you know, with the growth of children and seeing that parents are not there. And Christy, basically, once we did establish that my wife was going to work full time, became a after school kid, which kind of hurt her, I think, in a lot of ways. So it those changes were pretty hard for me to accept, going from one role to a dual parenting role.
Mm-hmm. I know the accident sounds like a pivotal moment, but are there any other moments where you really felt like you leveled up as a father?
I would say that having my daughter, who would call me once I saw that she was no longer a little child or immature adolescent, and I could see that she became mature, it made me feel like, hey, I think I accomplished bringing up a decent human being in this world. And it made me feel as if, you know, I really did something, and my fears of her going down the wrong path were no longer there. So it did feel good knowing that she probably going to be okay.
If you could go back in time to your younger self before becoming a dad, what would you say? What advice would you give yourself?
Well, for me in particular, my preconceived ideas of women, men and girls, would be a huge thing. I think that even in today's society is something that young men should be aware of, should be taught by their parents, that they, you know, their ideas of what women are is wrong in some respects, and is tainted by the visualizations and the things that we read and hear about. And I think that one of the major issues that, you know, I think about some of the stories my daughter told me personally, how she, you know, being a waitress one time, how, you know, a drunk patron would, you know, grab her or smack her on the butt or something like that. And I'm like, oh my God, this is happening today. You know, it's just very sad to hear that. And from what I'm hearing from other women, including my current wife, is that this is very common. And I don't think a lot of men understand that. So we need to start changing how we look at things like that early on in a young man's life.
Absolutely. And, you know, I struggle with this a lot myself, but when you think about how your children are going to remember you, what do you hope that your children remember most about you?
I want Christy to remember that. I want her to remember how much I loved her, how much I love her today, and how much she means to me, and And I think she does feel that way, that I am totally in her fan club and want her to succeed. And I think that she carries that with her and will always carry that with her. You know, it's because she is my world. And I think I've accomplished getting her to understand that.
Yeah. Are there anything else in the legacy you want to leave behind, not just for your kids, but potentially other fathers who are looking for guidance?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of people out there that have different opinions on how to be a father, how to be tough. I think that for my case, that I might have been a little bit easier to Christy, where I should have been tougher in some instances. So to figure out that perfect balance kind of depends on the child also, what they need. Christy turned out to be a wonderful human being, so maybe I'm putting too much on my own shortcomings, but I think that being the best person you can be, the best parent, and understanding no one's perfect, love your kids more than yourself, and most importantly, be human and be, when appropriate, be ready to say you're sorry when you mess up, and understand that they're looking at you to be loving enough to care when you make a mistake, to say you're sorry. I think that's so important. Of course, I've only been sorry once in my life, but
of course,
it's they're human beings. They're little human beings with feelings, and they understand more than you think. And if you are unfair, or if you are caught with something that you did wrong and not able to man up and say that you were wrong, they're going to know. They're going to know. So.
Well, Paul, I want to thank you very, very much. And you've been a terrific guest for this first episode of Sage Dad Life. And over the coming weeks, we'll have more and more fathers who come in and give their perspective. And I do think that it's helpful to hear this from other men. I think you mentioned it, men just aren't that great at talking about these things. And hopefully we can start to change that.
Yes, I agree. And I thoroughly enjoyed this moment with you. And I hope that you're right, that men will start to listen and learn from themselves. And, you know, I think it is a good thing for us to open up and see that there's a lot of similarities in how we grow our kids into normal human beings and what effect we actually have on them.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, and you have a wonderful day.
And you too, sir. Have a good one.
Bye. This episode of Sage Dad Life could be sponsored by your brand. Just like fatherhood, the best things in life come with support, guidance, and a little wisdom. Help dads navigate their journey with confidence. For your quality brand, we're proud to present engaged and empowered fathers. Visit www.sagedad.life or email rob@sagedad.life for more information. There is something truly special about reading to a child. It's more than just words on a page. It's laughter, connection, and the little moments that turn into lifelong memories. Whether it's a silly story that gets them giggling or a bedtime favorite they ask for night after night, books have a way of bringing us closer. In this segment, we're going to dive into some of the best and most read books in our house. Because stories that we share today shape the love of reading for a lifetime. The first book I want to talk about today is The Wonky Donkey. Song and music by Craig Smith, illustration by Katz Colley. It was the very first book that Sage got. She got it from Grandma, And let me tell you, I must have read it 1,000 times. And you know what? It never gets old. Every single time we laugh, giggling at the silly rhymes and that goofy, ever-growing description of the donkey. The best part, on about the 1,000th read or something, I finally paid attention to the credits and realized that it's actually a song. A quick search on Apple Music and boom, we found it.
And I saw a donkey, how I only had 3 legs. He was a wonky donkey, wonky donkey.
Okay, a lot of fun. I will tell you, Sage loved it even more with the music, dancing along as I tried to keep up with the tongue-twisting lyrics. And the book is just pure fun. One of those rare gems that kids adore and parents don't secretly dread reading over and over. If you haven't read The Wonky Donkey yet, grab a copy, get ready to laugh, and maybe even sing your way through it. Another regular in our house is The Grumpy Monkey by Susan Lang. Grumpy Monkey is delightful, simple. It tackles the important topics of emotions in a way that it's both relatable and appropriate for toddlers. The book follows Chimpanzee, a monkey who wakes up feeling grumpy for no particular reason. Despite his friend's attempts to cheer him up, Jim insists owning his feelings, and even when they make him uncomfortable. This book really introduces that idea that emotions can just happen. They don't always need to be explained or fixed right away. This is an important concept for young children who are just beginning to navigate the complex world of feelings. It helps normalize emotions like anger, frustration, sadness, and reassures kids that it's okay not to be happy all the time. The illustrations by Max Lang enhance this story and are absolutely beautiful. The face expressions, you'll see the photo from I posted on the blog where all I did was ask Sage, make a grumpy monkey face, and she did it immediately. She knew exactly what that was, and it was perfect. I love it. Grumpy Monkey is a fantastic tool for helping toddlers begin to understand emotions in a general, gentle, age-appropriate way. It's, I think, a must-read. And it fosters a really sense of empathy and self-acceptance, and highly, highly, highly recommended. Thanks for joining me on Sage Dad Life, where we embrace the joys, challenges, and lessons of being a present father. If today's episode resonated with you, share it with another dad, a parent, anyone who needs a reminder that the little moments matter most. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, connect with me on Instagram, Facebook, and X, or visit the site at www.sagedad.life. Email me at rob@sagedad.life. I would love to hear your stories and experiences. Until next time, keep showing up, keep embracing the journey, and most of all, keep making memories that'll last a lifetime. See you next week.